Welcome to episode 21 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is February 18th, 2012, and I'm Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-Apple fanboy, James Furlough.
Hey, I don't like your stereotype there.
Well, you know, it's a hard week to get away from it, in all fairness.
This week, try.
I know, me too. I actually think I did a good job, but I just wanted everybody to know right at the beginning. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. James has a short disclosure for us before we get into the meat of the show.
So, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP. Even when HP CEO goes out on the limb and says that Google Android might be closed in the future because they bought Motorola or some nonsense like that, they don't represent me either, okay? So, let's just be clear. I didn't say that. Meg Whitman CEO said that, and we do not represent each other. So, I should always say I when talking about, you know, my opinions, and I should never say we when talking about opinions regarding HP or stuff. So, yeah.
Meg Whitman. that's good to know.
Cool. Yeah, just want to clarify that. She's crazy. I am not. I didn't say that. That's, no, she's my boss, so I like her, I guess.
Right. hopefully she doesn't follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Speaking of which,
awesome.
Yeah, that actually would be pretty cool. Speaking of which, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at Matthew D. Furlough.
And I am at James Furlough.
Or you can just follow the show at Furlough Bros. I've got this double at thing is driving me nuts. I don't think Twitter thought through what they were doing.
I like to think that our audience is sophisticated and can figure it out.
I like to think so, too. It's just it's a tongue twister every time. Every time I read it, I think part of my problem is that I actually use the at sign in place of ats, like when I'm taking notes and stuff. Yeah. So I just think of it, I don't think of it as a code for something. I actually think of it as the word, as an English term, and sort of throws me off. I don't know if that makes sense. Anyways, I don't care if it makes sense. You can also follow us on Facebook, Furlough Bros. You can follow us on Google Plus at Furlough Bros. Like us, share us, plus us, all sorts of stuff. Retweet us. We like people getting into the conversation, so feel free to comment and share your thoughts. And I'm sure we'll talk about
which it. Which, did you notice our comment last week about our Vita coverage?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you're horrible. Yeah, so we got a comment basically saying that you're completely wrong and that so on one of my monologues I have to fire up the site and read the comment.
All right. Definitely.
So you have an opportunity to respond.
That's hilarious. I'm willing to defend my comments.
It's not hilarious. It's awesome. It's engagement.
Yeah. So, cool. Anyways, this week, like we said earlier, Apple kind of dominated the news this week, and obviously there was a lot of other stuff going on, but
Ridiculous how easy it is for them. I mean,
yeah.
I just don't – they never actually officially said anything. That's the crazy part.
Yeah.
But yet, it like – you can't – it's weird. I don't know.
Well, they're the masters of the controlled they're the masters of the controlled leak, I think.
Also, I'm reading this book called Made to Stick. I'm not really reading it. I'm listening to it, which in hindsight, I should be reading it because there's like – I always want to take notes, and it's hard to do that when there's just waves of noise. and so – but this – so the book is Made to Stick. It's awesome. It's basically if you've ever read Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point, he talks about – you know, things that tip into like popularity, they have a stickiness component to it. And then this book kind of goes, well, okay, well, what is that? and how do you make it? By the way, the authors are two brothers. So that's also awesome. But anyways, one of the things that they talk about, they have like the success formula, which is supposed to be sticky in itself, where basically what they do is they talk about different components of it. And one of them is like, how do you, you know, basically how do you keep people's attention? And, you know, how do you stop people from getting bored, right? And, you know, just going off and doing their own thing. Well, one of the ways that you can do it is you do something surprising. Right, they're just like, whoa, what? I, you know, surprise, and that immediately catches people's attention. The example they gave would be like a flight attendant when giving the whole, you know, required, you know, fasten your safety belt stuff, like making that into a comedy stand-up thing at the same time. You know, you're like, oh, now you're paying attention and learning stuff at the same time. But that's one way. The other way, which they actually said works better for doing a it's a sustained attention grabbing thing, which you'll see like Discovery Channel. They pretty much, this is exactly what they do. He goes to maintain sustained like attention on something, because you create a little mystery. And basically what you do is you ask questions and then you slowly answer them. And maybe you don't even like, you don't even just cut to the chase and say, by the way, here's the answer. You say, like, what we'd like to do is know this. And so we've learned a little bit here, and we've learned some stuff here, but how do those combine together to make something awesome? You know, come back after the commercial to find out. Right? I mean, like, Discovery Channel, they're notorious for doing this. And by the time you get to the end, you're like, all right, cool, I get it, yeah.
Right.
And I think what happens, and I don't even think they did this on purpose, and this is, like, a mistake that I think Microsoft and maybe even Google makes, you know, in their presentations, is Apple is very much like, there's this secret, right? There's a mystery, and so we're all captured by it. And then there's these leaks, you know, which they just happen naturally, but it's a piece of the puzzle. Oh, but how does it fit in? And so now we are just like, naturally, you know, it's all psychological. We are primed and want to pay attention to what's going on. You know, video games use this all the time. I think about like the Avatar web cartoon series, which I'm watching with my wife right now, and she loves, totally addicted.
Nice. So just so we're clear, not Avatar, the James Cameron Blue People movie, Avatar, The Last Airbender, the Nickelodeon Airbender cartoon. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's this idea of like, you know, there's this mystery, and I think that's what leads to all of this. You know, we know that there's going to be a product on the horizon because they're very regular in that sense. But what is it? What is it going to be? And the whole thing, like they say, the thing about the mystery is it can't be this is like a huge like book lesson here. It can't just be like you can't have this chasm of not understanding, of not knowing something. I'm, you know, like if I were to talk about like, you know, how does a catalytic converter work? You know, ask that kind of question, most people would be like, I don't even care because I don't even know the basics of how that works,
right?
Basically, but the mystery becomes super intriguing when there's just gaps in your knowledge. So you're like, so I know some stuff, but there's pieces missing, and that's why oftentimes you'll do like a little intro piece, and then you'll ask the question, and that's when you're like, oh, I don't know, you didn't tell me that. Tell me what it is. And so we have these. You know, we know that there's a product coming out. We know that it's probably going to be an iPad. We know that it's probably going to have the number 3. We kind of know what the shape is for the most part. But then there's all these other gaps that, you know, are intriguing. So all that is to say, for whatever reason, they have a very, you know, sticky way of keeping all of our attention to the point now where they don't even have to try. They just have to let things naturally leak out. And whatever, and then they have the grand reveal at the end, and we all go, "Yeah!" It's, you know, it's awesome, and we all celebrate because the mystery is
something
solved.
New. Yeah,
so it's a good book. I highly recommend it. You can pick it up on Audible. If we were a sponsor, I'd say type in, you know, furloughbros/whatever, but we're not, so that's a freebie.
What's the name of the book? It didn't stick.
Nice. Made to Stick. I honestly don't even know the author names.
All right,
but it's pretty obvious. Made to Stick.
Cool. Made to Stick.
On the cover.
Makes sense. All right. So, that to say,
Hopefully that was not. Hopefully we still have listeners at this point.
Just in case you were wondering, Google's competition for 2012 is coming out March 7th, almost assuredly. The announcement will be made Wednesday, March 7th, which is a couple weeks from now. Yeah, it'll be not this Wednesday, not the Wednesday after, but the Wednesday after that. So we have a solid 2 more weeks of rumors and stupid things and people getting all excited before we finally get to the big reveal. And I've been every week for the last 6 months, there's been rumors about iPad 3 that we haven't brought up. But I figured since we now know the day, that was worth mentioning. We also have pretty well confirmed information about the screen resolution, which I'll let you get to. I've heard a lot of pretty confirmed rumors that it's going to have the A6 system on a chip, and so I guess the big question that everybody's going to be asking, which I guess it's one of the things that the iPad has always been a lag behind the iPhone. The iPhone has always been the super powerful, brings out everything new, and then the iPad takes everything the iPhone has and then improves on it. So it's, you know, the iPhone 4 had, you know, all sorts of cool hardware, and the iPad had the same thing but with more RAM. And that's sort of been the evolution. And whereas this would be different if it has the A6 chip, whereas the iPhone, so if it gets the new chip before the iPhone, and then the other big one, and I actually think that this, I just, from the rumblings of what you've heard at like Verizon and AT&T, it sounds pretty realistic that the iPad 3 is going to be an LTE device, which I feel like...
Which is not available where I live, so I don't even care.
Right. yeah. But you know, like I said earlier this year at CES, Verizon was pretty unequivocal about the fact that all new devices are going to be LTE compatible. So it'll be interesting to see how Apple works a deal out with them if they don't. But I don't think they are. I think it's going to be I think the iPad 3 is going to be LTE. I read an article this week where they're like, yeah, that's pretty. We're hearing sources inside of AT&T and Verizon that are confirming this. So it sounds like it's just going to be another iPad 2, but cooler. And I still stand that I think the exciting part of this isn't going to be the iPad 3. I mean, if I had to buy one, I'd probably get an iPad 3. But I still think that the really exciting announcement is going to be the drop in price of the iPad 2. I think that's going to be what changes stuff. Other than that, it seems like it's a pretty regular update, and it sounds like it's going to be a pretty awesome update. I don't know what's the news on the screen, James?
So apparently, Mac Rumors was able to get their hands on a Retina display, and they actually have a picture of it, and it's the right size. And then they took a magnifying glass and were able to like. So first and foremost, I guess like you can buy displays online just anytime, anywhere, but pretty much it's always a scam. And so, you know, this one was like, all right, what's so special about this one? Because they're kind of all scams. And I guess they were actually able to, like, take a magnifying glass to the screen, and it actually does show twice the pixel density.
Wow.
Which would be hard for a scan to do, I think. I don't know. But it's literally not hooked up to anything. So literally they have to, like, do a lighting and a magnifying glass and count the diodes, which sounds horrible.
Yeah, but, that sounds exciting.
Yeah, but I love like, you can buy them online, anywhere, no problem, don't worry about it.
Well, if you've ever broken your screen, you find that they are pretty available, especially if they're in production
stuff. Dude, I have a friend, this is crazy, so he works for HP, he got a webOS device and dropped it and shattered the display. Jeez. So, I kid you not, he bought a display online, like, you know, third-party manufacturer. Which, by the way, HP paid for all of this because it was under warranty. And he's, you know, I guess technical enough, where he literally was able to remove the bezel, remove all the pieces, clean it all off so that it looked the way it was, put this new piece of glass on, get the right type of tacky spray, which I forget, he bought the tack stuff at like almost like it was something random, like a brewer shop. Like they had the right type of thing. Yeah, I know it wasn't where you would expect it to be, but he was able to track it down, glued it down, pasted it, works fine. And he was like, it was an intense. It took a few hours to do it. But he's like, but I did it on my own and it works. And HP paid for the whole thing, so that's cool. I was like, wow,
that is quite the commitment to a out of date device.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, when you can't just go to a store and pick up a new one off warranty, you got to go to extremes.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Nice. So, yeah, that's the iPad 3. We'll move right along. This is kind of a big deal, though, especially for the corporate opera. As we talked, I think it was just last week, we mentioned the fact that we were talking about the relationship between Motorola and Google and how that whole thing is going to kind of pan out. And you mentioned the fact that Google doesn't actually own Motorola yet. The purchase hasn't been officialized. And so there's still kind of, even though they're making these plans, it may not necessarily go through. Well, earlier this week on Monday, the EU approved of Google purchasing Motorola, and then like 3 hours later, the US also confirmed it. So,
and all that's left is China now.
Yeah, which
that's the big barrier.
That is the big barrier, and China's pretty easy. There's a certain dollar amount that you have to hit.
Yeah, well, the rumor mill is actually they might bring Google's search engine back to the negotiating table because they're not in China. Well, you might be able to. How does it work? Like, their Google.cn doesn't work anymore. They forward you to some other country that's nearby, I guess, and so they have like a zero China presence. It's really weird. And so they were saying, like, China might say, yeah, we'll approve it if you bring us back into China and censor correctly or something. Who knows? But I'm sure it'll get approved. It's just a matter of time.
Right. Right. Yeah, I think the, you know, from the two that would actually might stand up to it, and I think, you know, where now it's back in Google's court, I think is what the end result is. And if Google wants it bad enough, they'll get it. So with the EU and the US, I think many times it's, you know, you can actually, even if you want it bad enough and you're willing to pay out the nose to get it, they can still say no. And sometimes too. AT&T, T-Mobile.
Those other guys.
Yeah. So that's a pretty big deal. So I think we can officially start talking about Motorola and Google as...
Googlerola.
Yeah, Google. Like, it's technically Motorola Mobility, right? It's not actually...
Correct.
Okay.
It's not that, yeah.
Which is, you know, because back when Apple first disrupted their entire economic model, they actually had to break into three different companies, I think. Or maybe it was just two, but...
I don't remember.
Motorola Mobility is different from Motorola, so pay attention. Details. So,
cool. You know, cool. We'll see how that goes. There's kind of, there's a lot of questions on whether or not that will work out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one of the, like I think this comes back to what you said with Meg Whitman.
Yeah.
It does call into question the whole, you know, Microsoft never got into building computers and. There was a reason for it. It allowed their partners to kind of... Their partners had as much an advantage as anybody. Whereas if Microsoft had started doing what Apple does, where they started building hardware in-house, they hypothetically could undercut the other guys. Because the other guys, you know, there's a certain amount that they have to pay for their computer, you know, all the hardware and everything, and then they have to pay... a licensing fee for every copy of Windows that they sell.
Yeah, but Android's free, so that doesn't matter. Well, you know, Google doesn't charge.
Well, yeah, but it's not just the licensing fee. What happens if what happens if Microsoft were to start releasing Windows 8 phone or Windows 8 computers that they build, and everybody else had to sit on Windows 7 for a year? And the only way to get the advanced computer...
that's what you would see. It would be... you would see like two things. It could be a different release schedule, definitely. You know, they get the Nexus line first or whatever. And then the other thing would be that, you know, it's just, it's so tightly integrated, and the, you know, the hardware and the software just work so well that it makes all the other phones a joke.
Right.
You know, you could see that where it's kind of, it becomes the de facto best device.
Which is Apple's argument against licensing their software, and always has been. Well, we custom build our software for our hardware, and if Google starts to custom build their software for their hardware, then everybody's, their only ability, the only thing they can do is now, you know, if Google decides they want to standardize a screen size, which I don't think they would, but so let's pick a more obscure part. Let's say they want to standardize a speaker.
Well, you could say the way that the software talks to, like, the
hardware.
Chip.
Right. If they want to do something and they want to design it specifically for their hardware, now everybody has to do it the exact same way, and there's no way to differentiate yourself.
Well, I think they will design it for a specific hardware, and then they will tack on compatibility for the others.
Right.
That's my guess, but you know what? They don't care, honestly. You know, if HTC gets out of the game and they got Motorola to run everything for them, and they just become huge and they get to keep all those sales, I think they'd be totally okay with that.
Google doesn't care, but their fan base cares, I think.
Nah,
I care.
Nah, I don't think you do.
Oh, man.
You don't care. Once you got your phone, you got your phone. And this is something that you're going to watch it like... You know, HTC will go from doing, 10 Android phones a year to 5 Android phones and 5 Windows phones to, you know, switching. It's something, it'd be a slow transition. And, I mean, and so much is going to happen in 5-10 years anyways that I don't think we'll be able to know for sure. You know, there could be something else that totally disrupts the market again, and to the point where, you're just like, well, you know, whatever. Yeah, HTC had to get out, but for a different reason or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
They all switch over to WebOS. Yeah, that was her thing. That was her thing. Dude, she is such a salesperson. It's awesome.
Yeah.
That was her whole thing, too. She's like, I believe that Android's going to become closed after the Motorola-Google deal. Therefore, WebOS will really be the only choice for...
Open.
Yeah.
You know, anyway.
Sure. Alright, maybe.
I still think that there's a Linux-based option out there lurking that's gonna blow everybody's mind. But
dude, they're all Linux-based, but that's alright.
No, they're Unix-based. That's different. Oh. There's a difference.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, I'm having to face the real subtle differences between Unix and Linux, because I've always had just kind of a general knowledge of it. Now that I have a working knowledge of it, I'm learning a lot. I'm gonna get a little more picky, I think. But
bring the level of conversation up a notch.
Exactly. So yeah, I don't know. I think it'll change the market though, and I think what they're going to do, and I think this is,
and I think for the better. That's my opinion.
You do? Well, I think
yeah.
I think it'll be for the better, but I think what they're going to do is they're going to open up the door for Microsoft.
Okay. I like Microsoft's operating system. Looks cool. That's okay with me.
But I'm talking from a competitive perspective. I think Google's making a mistake.
Oh, nah. I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Maybe.
It all
depends on how fast they can scale up the Motorola deal. If they decide to go that route and it actually, you know, trends in that direction,
right?
It's all like how fast can they execute? Because if they can do it really fast, nah, they're fine.
And I think what you're going to have to watch really carefully, I think the first big sign of a change was the Droid 4 just got announced and released last week. I think we even talked about it. Okay.
No. Well, we didn't talk about it, but it did.
Yeah, okay. Well, I had an article and we ended up not talking about it. But one of the things I noticed about it And people, oh, I got a lot of complaints. Is guess what operating system the Droid 4 is running on?
It's not Ice Cream Sandwich.
No, it's an Android 2, whichever that one was.
Wow.
Yeah, they're not even on Android 3 yet. And Android 4 was just released, and everybody was like, "Are you kidding me? Like, it's bad enough when Android 3 was, or when the Droid 3 was on Android 2. What are you guys doing?" And I think what you'll see is, I think Droid 5, whatever that is, will be Android 5. And I think that's where you're going to start to see, you know, and that's been a big complaint within the Google ecosystem of OEMs, original engineering manufacturer. Let me say that clearly instead of just slurring it. Original engineering and manufacturing. So the guys that are designing all these phones, is that Google has to approve of hardware. They have a very kind of, it's, you can't just say, as a hardware designer, say, "I want Android 4.0 and download Android 4.0 from the Google website and download it onto your phone, and then it works. It doesn't work that way. They have a huge approval process, they keep track of all of it, and they don't do a very good job of actually disseminating their software and getting the most recent software into their phones. And so there's still huge security risks. You can't get Chrome on any but 1% of their phones, and really the only phones that do have the latest software are the Nexus phones, because, you know, they prioritize themselves. And I think what you're going to see is a continued or a more extreme march down that road, and people just aren't going to go and buy, they're going to stop buying HTC phones. They're going to hurt HTC, and they're going to drive Samsung and HTC and all these other companies away from Motorola to somebody that they're not going to get burned by. And I think Microsoft, that is one of the few things that I think they still have a real core competency is, which is keeping all the OEMs at the same revolution or rev of their latest software. So,
well, part of that is because they come out with something once every 2-3 years. You know, it's very, right. You know, you can keep up with that.
Right, and it's very well orchestrated. But I mean, there's a lot of
that's
things
true.
That they
okay,
do.
That's true.
They have figured out the system to make sure that the moment Windows 7 comes out, people stop selling Windows Vista and start selling Windows 7. And even more so, they sell Windows Vista computers for the last 6 months before Windows 7 with a guarantee, okay, this is going to come with Windows 7. You're going to be able to upgrade it as soon as Windows 7 comes out.
Well, that's because I get the feeling that Microsoft actually develops it with, like, they bring in HP and Dell and Acer and all those and be like, okay, here's what we're planning on doing. Here's the schematics. Here's our test software so far. Here's what we're thinking about changing. You know, here's everything. You know, give us your feedback. Let us know what you're doing. You know, they treat them truly like partners. Whereas it feels like, you know, Google, because of the, you know, they're attempting to copycat that mystery for the consumer, which is cool, because Microsoft doesn't even kind of play that game.
Right.
And, you know, so that's one of the advantages, right, is we all know it's coming. But because that Google's trying to play that mystery game, the OEMs fall into that trap too. They literally got to wait to see what comes out and get their hands on it instead of Google literally flying them all in and saying, okay, here's what we're working on, you know, let's talk about capabilities and what handsets can do, and, you know, and let's make these things compatible from day one. You know, the other thing is Microsoft's got, what is it, like 25 years of experience doing this?
I think that makes a huge, they have entire departments devoted to keeping everybody on the same page. And I've talked with a good buddy of mine, works for NVIDIA, and this is kind of where I get my insider knowledge. And so NVIDIA, obviously, they develop chips both for Microsoft boxes and Android phones. They do that. And his complaint was entirely had to do with the fact that, you know, we're the graphics kings. We make the best graphics processors, and Apple's kicking our butt. And it's not because they're better at designing graphics chips, but because their software and the time that they spend and everything is on pace with each other, and so they go in development, whereas Google would just kept messing over NVIDIA, like, oh, you built this new chip? Okay, well, it's only going to run the last version of our software, and it won't have any of the so all these all these hardware acceleration things that you did are they're not useful, sorry. It's like, what are we supposed to do? And so they can design these great chips that run at a million gigahertz, and they can put tons of RAM, but they're still fighting Google because Google won't give them the latest software. And it just, like, it blows my mind. Whereas Microsoft, like you said, because they have a system, they've worked out, they have tons of people with tons of experience. All these companies grew up together. I think Microsoft is in a much better position to step in and sit down with HTC and say, this is what Windows Phone 8 is going to look like. We'd like to have a conversation with you and make sure that you're on the same page with us. And then all of a sudden, you're going to actually have hardware and software that's, really
Yeah, I
tightly
almost
integrated.
so I you know we're saying this and it's really starting to crystallize for me. It's almost like, and I'm going to come back to that whole that shroud of mystery, wrapped in an enigma, smothered in secret sauce idea,
Right.
where it's like you can have mystery if you control everything and you genuinely don't need to share with anybody. Of course, even Apple, like they will have developers, they'll bring them in and say, okay, we want you to make some apps, using these latest, APIs, which I bet they even give them like fake phones to make it happen.
They've had those stories about where they're like they literally have to have the phone chained to the ground, and Apple employees come and check to make sure that they're physically bound to one location.
Yeah, which is crazy. Awesome. But I mean, so there's those steps, right, that you take. And, once again, Apple's got, what, 25 years of, practice doing this. Granted, many of those years were not unpracticed. They almost went bankrupt. But the point is, it almost feels like if you're going to be mysterious, you need to control a lot of the system. And it's just that in that auxiliary stuff, apps, things like that. You don't have to control that necessarily. You only got to give them a little bit of a heads up for it. But like when it comes to like hardware, like fundamentally important things, you have to control it. Otherwise, this is why I like what Microsoft does here. You go, no, there's no secrets. We're actually, before we even build Windows 8, we're going to come to you and say, what would you like us to do? What would make your lives easier to produce these machines? And we'll try to incorporate it and we'll come back to you. And I mean, I am almost certain, I don't know for sure, but I am like, I would not be surprised if literally each hardware company, they may not talk it together in a single room, even though I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. But I guarantee that there's a team of Microsoft where they are like, here, we have sketched out what we're planning to do for Windows 8, from a hardware needs perspective. They're not, who cares about what the GUI looks like? Maybe they do, I don't know. But they're like, here's how we're planning on doing it. Will this work for you guys? Are we totally going to mess with you in some way that we need to know about? And I think that, they are like, they are super open. And then they're also open with the consumers. Here's what we're planning on doing. Here's what we're thinking about doing. Start thinking about making apps. Start thinking about changing the way that you work. You think about the laptop, the whatever. They are like open to a fault. And I think it's because of their model, because they depend so much on other people. They're like, this is what we're going to do. At one point in time, I heard someone say, like, well, actually, they're the 800-pound gorilla. And so they announce everything early with the hopes of scaring all those little guys. Because you get customers who go, oh, well, if I just wait 6 months, I'll get it from Microsoft, who I trust, instead of, trying it from this unknown. That was the theory. But I don't actually think that's the tr I don't think that's the case. I think that's a side benefit. I think they're really doing it for, for the manufacturers. Now, as a result, there's certain things that, they tend to do that for everything, things where they wouldn't necessarily even need to do it, but they will, like with their Xbox, or at the time their Zune players. They'll tell all that early because that's just who they are. That's what they do. They don't differentiate, even though they don't need to, for for a lot of those.
But, well, and I think what they I think they find, you know, they don't. I think Apple has at times done itself a disservice. I don't think you've seen any terrible consequences of the fact that they, you know, that developers don't really know what. Well, even with Apple, they do a developer announcement of the new operating system, months before the actual hardware is released. You know, they let people start developing, and I think what Microsoft's goal is, it's like with the Kinect, when they announced it as the Natal, the whole idea was they wanted people to start dreaming about games that you would interact with your entire body, so that when they announced the software, when they released the APIs, this hardware or the software guys could go, okay, we already have an idea, and we're going to start writing right away, because we want to get this game, we want it to be a launch day title, or within the week. Whereas with Apple, because they're so secretive, I think sometimes that's hurt them, because certain hardware aspects, people go, I didn't even know that was an option. You know, it was like, the example that I think going back to is when Steve Jobs showed their Jenga game with the, when they added the gyroscope chip. And they just had somebody write a quick app so he could show off the thing. Whereas Microsoft would want a game developed by a professional gamer that you could, or a game company that you could buy the next day. Apple showed off a demo piece of software. I think that's hurt Apple, but because they're so dominant in the field of apps, I don't think you've seen it really take as much. And I guess what this
well,
all kind
of
goes...
they've decided instead of having 100 new apps on launch day, they're going to have 4.
Right.
And they work super tightly with them and lock it all down. You know, and I also think, like, you know, thinking more about it, like, I actually think they work hand in hand with Foxconn. I bet you the people that there's a group at Foxconn where they know what everything is, and they are also part of the planning process. I mean, they might fly to Cupertino in order to keep that secrecy, whatever. But but they know. All that to say, you know, and Google will get there. I mean, especially working with Motorola, they're gonna get an insider view on what it looks like on the other side, and they're gonna go, oh, okay, here's what we need to change to make it better, to make it so everyone's on the same page. You know, I think that they're going to get there. Will it be fast enough to keep everybody with them?
I still think they're going to kick out people like HTC and NVIDIA, and they're going to drive
towards
Microsoft.
Nah, they're going to self-select out, but...
Okay. Yeah. All right, fair enough. Anyways...
Wow, can we beat that horse anymore, or is it already dead?
I think it's dead.
All right.
Anyways, so the next one I wanted to just briefly bring up, because last week I said I'd bring you big news we'll bring you the final score on all the lawsuits, but we'll also bring you any really significant things. And I just want to mention this, so in case your friends start talking about it, you know what's going on. So Apple finally sued the big dog. They're suing Google over a Nexus phone. Big deal about this is that for the last couple of years they've been suing all of Android's partner or all of Google's partners over Android things where they fight with the operating system. This is the first time that Google is going off after the most recent version. They're going after Ice Cream Sandwich. They're going after Google. So it's kind of a big deal. I think this is I don't think this is the one for all the chips per se, but I think we're getting a lot closer to the final decision on, you know, what's the deal going to be? How is Google at some point here? Google and Apple are going to have to come to a compromise. Either Apple's going to have to, you know, suck it up and deal with the fact that Google's doing nothing wrong, or Google's going to have to, you know, pay out the nose to get Apple to be happy. And I think that decision is going to come sooner than later, especially now that they're clearly they've built up their lawsuits. They've won a couple, they've lost a couple, and it seems like they're getting pretty close to going right for the heart of it.
I would like it to see be resolved sooner rather than later, because at this point in time, it's costing consumers.
Right, I agree. You know, so hopefully that'll come. We can stop following that drama as time goes on. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, right.
So Now on to
let's do some comedy.
Yeah, this is awesome. So Samsung announced this week that
so they didn't really announce, it was an interview. Well,
they had an interview, and I don't even know if I can get through this. the quote that I have is TVs are ultimately about picture quality, is what this representative from Samsung, I don't have his name, believes. And the reason why he was
his
asked
name is,
about them,
Chris Mosley.
Okay, so this is the guy that deserves all of our derision. all right, Chris, we're coming after you. Basically, what they're saying is that if you're paying attention to CES, if you listen to our amazing show, there was a big deal with smart TVs. Panasonic's obviously going down that road, and the thought is the reason why they are going so hard towards the smart TV is because Google is bringing out the big guns, but more importantly, Apple's bringing out the nukes. They're getting ready to build their own TV, and you know, there's a lot of debates about when that'll happen, what the time frame is, what it'll actually be. But the thought is that Apple's going to build a TV, and Samsung claims that they're not worried about Apple's smart TV because.
So I want to read this whole quote because I mean, it's
okay,
just,
go for it.
It is just awesome.
It's gold.
It says, TVs are ultimately about picture quality. Ultimately. How smart they are? Great. But let's face it. Wow, hello.
Oh, did I not? Sorry. Sorry, I meant to mute that. How awkward. Sorry about that, guys.
Way to ruin my dramatic reading. And now he is laughing uncontrollably in the background. Okay, anyways. So it says here, TVs are uncontrollably... Oh my gosh, you totally threw me off. All right, TVs are ultimately about picture quality. Ultimately. How smart they are, great. But let's face it, he's just rolling in the background right now, totally distracting me. This is not funny. It's a secondary concern. I'm going to cover them up. The ultimate is about picture quality, and there is no way that anyone, new or old, can come along this year or next year and beat us on picture quality. This sounds really familiar. So from that perspective, it's not a great concern, but it remains to be seen what they're going to come out with, if anything. So I think I remember, was it BlackBerry who said these computer guys, or was it Palm?
It was Palm.
These computer guys, we've been doing phones for tons of years. These computer guys aren't just going to come in and whoop us because we know how to do phones.
Right.
Whoops.
Search
engine guys can come in and beat you, apparently. So
yeah, easily. The statement is so patently stupid that it's not even funny. Number one. Number one, I'll tell you what. I know maybe personally, you know, no, granted, I'm a 25-year-old. And I don't have a lot of friends with a ton of disposable income, but I know maybe 3 or 4 people that have screens with great picture quality. Those are always, you walk in and you say, man, that's some great picture quality. Those are great big TVs. I'm going to go with the ones I can afford. Number one, I think more people are driven by affordability than anything, which I think is ultimately going to be Apple's biggest stumbling block in the TV realm, because I don't think people actually care about picture quality. I think what he's stating is similar to what you get with video game systems, especially back when when the PlayStation 3 came out versus the Wii, because they came out within like 2 weeks of each other. The 360 was already out, had been out for like 8 months. And the whole idea was the Wii is going to flop because it's got a terrible processor. It's got these tiny discs that they don't, they're regular CDs, whereas Microsoft had the HD DVDs and obviously the PlayStation 3 are all on Blu-rays. So they've got super dense information that they can store on these discs. And everybody was like, the Wii's going to flop. The Wii's going to flop because graphics matter. And everybody within the industry, they're trying to build better and better graphics. And everybody who's talking about the systems, they're trying to, graphics are where it's at. You want really crisp images. You want beautiful stuff. You want awesome looking things. And ultimately, Wii kicked both of their butts for like 3 years because they had more fun games. You know, it was just so clear that content was king, and I think ultimately this is the truth, and I think this is the biggest reason why Apple has waited as long as they have, is because content's king. If you have fun games, then people are going to buy your system. They're going to play on your system. And Wii's problem was they came out with a bunch of fun games, and they haven't had any great games yet. Skyward Sword's pretty good, and I think a lot of people dusted off their Wii for the first time to play Zelda Skyward Sword, but they haven't had any system sellers recently, which is why everybody who has a Wii, or wanted a Wii, has a Wii. Whereas with the Xbox and the PlayStation, what they did was that when they built these super dense discs, it allowed guys, not necessarily, I mean, graphics obviously are kind of amazing, but if you want super great graphics, yeah, you don't you don't buy a PlayStation 3, you buy a desktop. Desktops have way better graphics capabilities. The reason why you buy those, and the reason why I think they're beating the Wii right now, is because for really big immersive games where you have really intelligent artificial intelligence and there's a lot of dynamic storytelling going on, it requires a tremendous amount of information density. I don't actually think Nintendo can keep up with that information density and have semi-decent graphics, whereas PlayStation and the 360 can do both because they've got huge processors and they've got huge information density. And I think it's entirely wrapped around content is the reason why the PlayStation 3 and the 360 are taking off, are continuing to build steam, whereas the Wii's just dropped off the face. So all that being said, I think people care about I think that as long as content is equal, then they start caring about that extra 10%, which is picture quality. I think picture quality is actually a very small consideration, especially since cost is kind of a big determination.
So it's interesting. I have like two thoughts, I guess. You know, the first one is like there are different components, right? There is there's the content itself, like you talked about. There's the way that you get to that content, the UI, that, you know, the way that's presented. Size is something that he doesn't even kind of talk about. Right. And then there is the quality. You know, if I had to tell you, you know, there's a, I don't know, a 90-inch screen that actually, you know, it's not totally pixelated, it looks pretty good. Or, you know, there's a 10-inch screen that, like, you know, it is lifelike, right? You can't even see the pixels. I don't know which one I would take. You know, that's an interesting conversation and trade-offs there, which I, you know, which we'll see. I also think, you know, one of the things that there's another book, this is Book Hour with James, called, I didn't actually read this one. I just know the cliff notes of it, called Blue Ocean Strategy, another business book around, whatever. The idea is, if you got everyone competing in a certain way in a marketplace, a la picture quality, TV size, thinness, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You do what's called a blue ocean strategy, which is you take the current direction that everybody's headed in and you tweak it a little bit to where there's this big blue ocean of possibility and no one else is there. That's exactly what Nintendo did, right?
Right.
They said, we're not going to play the processor and the disc density and the other content game, right? We're like, we're going to focus on games and we're going to bring in motion controllers. Totally changed the conversation. And it worked awesome for them, right? I mean, it was, you know, the sales were unbelievable for them. Like you said, the problem is everyone else kind of eventually if it's not a sustainable thing and you don't, content does become eventually important, you got to play that game too. That was one that's like, it's not completely new Blue Ocean. We can't forget about content.
Right.
You're going to struggle after a while, you know, which is what they're running into. And I feel like, and this is what Apple did with the iPhone, right? They said, we're all heading in this one direction. We're going to tweak it, and we're going to say it's a computer with a phone module. and let's see what happens. Computer in your pocket. You know, will they do something similar to that in the, you know, for the TV? You know, who knows? But I just love Samsung. I haven't seen anything yet, and we're not concerned.
Right, and I understand that you can't, you know, it's, if you don't have a good strategy, you haven't come up with a strategy, because you don't actually know what you're up against, you don't want to walk into, I mean, Apple does this all the time, they're like, well, obviously, whatever they're doing is this dumbest thing I've ever heard of, that's awful, you should never do, you know, third-party multitasking with third-party applications are terrible, why would you ever want to do that 6 months later? So we have third-party applications.
The best things yeah. ever. We're glad right. we invented it. Like, what?
Yeah, exactly. What do you mean? You know, so it's
that existed earlier. What is this? It's so weird.
I know, but the thing is that it's, you know, there's definitely. I think what everybody's pointing out is that it's like, I think the reason why this is so ludicrous is because Panasonic clearly has a strategy. They have a game. They're getting ready. They're going, okay, we're not ready yet. We don't know what we're up against, but we see the potential, and we want to be poised at the cusp when everybody figures out what consumers want. Because let's be honest, Apple might be wrong. Consumers may not want it. But I think Panasonic still senses the fact that people want smarter television, so we have to build a new way to interact with them. And that's what Panasonic was all about this round, and I just think I think Samsung's gonna have a rough time when the TVs finally hit the market, because they're not paying attention. They're sitting there thinking that everything's cool, don't worry about it, and I think it's gonna hurt them bad.
Or at least this guy's not gonna have a job much longer. One of the two.
Yeah.
It's but. Just like... Really, dude? Really?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So I, for this, I think it's this next one. So I saw there's this new game, okay, that is out, and I'm going to attempt to play, so I have my background music, because it just helps set the mood. So here, I gotta turn it up just a little bit. All right. Is that just reasonably?
Yeah, that's not bad.
Okay, good. Like I said, this is gonna help set the mood. Oh yeah, I'm gonna turn it down a little bit. So there's a new game by Konami, and it involves fake girlfriends, and they send you emails. It is what? Awesome. So,
what?
Exactly. Doesn't this music help with that?
You can a little just bit. Feel it.
So, Konami's... I'm probably destroying their name. Konami's dating sim, Love Plus. It's a hit in Japan. And they have a video, and I highly recommend watching this video.
All right, I'll you're check just this like, out.
It's amazing. But... basically, it allows players to have girlfriends without the hassle of actually having a girlfriend. And they, yeah. And so they just launched their new Love Plus for the 3DS. Okay, I gotta turn this down just a little bit, but we'll let that just keep going in the background. So the idea is you literally like have this. It's like a virtual pet. Remember those things?
Yeah.
I don't remember, like a Tamagotchi or Gucci, whatever. I don't remember.
Digimon,
there we go. It's like that, but it's a girlfriend. So you do things to it, like, and they show pictures of mostly guys. Of course, there's also girls, which I think is weird. Like, you know, like you can type and ask them questions, and they will, like, talk to you. And, you know, that kind of stuff. But now with on the 3DS, it has some augmented reality where, like, you literally can bring it over the couch and it will know what the couch is, and like your girlfriend will be sitting on the couch.
Oh my god!
It's awesome. You can even and then you can print off like large pieces of papers of your girlfriend, like pictures of them. And by the way, this is like cartoon level. I mean,
right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's so it's not like, I mean, it's cartoon. But now they have another one, a new feature, where the girlfriend mail system will send you an email from your in-game girlfriend that you can then, like, it'll be like once a month, or not once a month, like once a day email talking about her day, basically. And then on birthdays and anniversaries, they'll get, in quotes, special mail. Whatever that means. And it's only going to cost you $4 a month.
Only $4 a month.
Dude, that's cheaper than a real girlfriend.
That's what I was going to say. It's actually quite a deal.
But yeah, so, yeah, Love Plus on the 3DS. Big time hit in Japan. Oh, man. Dude, I saw that and was like, you've got to be kidding me. That's amazing.
I'm gonna avoid any racial stereotyping today. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people in America that would enjoy that game too.
I had the funny feeling though, like most guys, they'd be like, it's a cartoon. That wasn't what I was looking for.
I was looking for a real girl I could kiss.
We will stop it there.
Period.
Okay. This could get bad really quick. Yeah, I love it. Just send you emails. Love. Plus.
Oh man.
That's.
Oh man.
Wow. Sweet game. Now another game that this one's cool because it relates back to our that football game and how I was talking about how, you know, football players are getting better because they're playing football, you know, football video games.
Right.
MLB 2K12 like explicitly does this. This guy was saying that it actually makes him a better pitcher because, you know, obviously games like you were talking about, they're dense, they got heavy computing, they can solve for these things. It is able to track his trends as a pitcher. And then he's like, oh, whenever I get a 3-2 count, I like to throw a fastball high and away. It knows that. And it will tell you, like, I think it'll do, like, heat zones. Like, here's what the batter is expecting. And it'll, like, be expecting your pitch that you're getting ready to throw. And you're like, oh, whoa, that's pretty crazy. I guess I should change up what I would do.
That is so weird.
Yeah, and so it gives you this, like, they talk about it's real-time, like, visual cues and comments from the game commentators, too. They're like, wow, he looks like he's throwing a lot of fastballs, you know, early on in the count. Or whatever they say, I don't actually know. But this idea of, like, these video games are getting super, super smart, and it's awesome, where they'll even be able to track your tendencies and improve you as... You know, okay, they're not going to help you pitch better, like, physically. But, you know, let's say you have the talent to do that. It helps you with the psychological piece of the game, just making you that much better.
I think that's the difference. I think I've always felt that the difference between, you know, somebody who's really good and somebody who goes pro is somebody who understands the game. You know, it's the mental capacity of it. You know, you can be great because you're a gladiator, you know, and would have fit in great in, you know, Roman times because you're just a beast. But if you don't have the mental capacity to also understand what you're doing, you know, to be smart, then you're not going to perform very well in these sports. And, you know, especially with a game like, you'd think with a game like baseball where the strategy is so slow where people can really think about it and communicate to the field and kind of figure out, it would really help to be able to just keep track of all that stuff in your head and kind of know your own tendencies. That's pretty cool. I actually, as you well know, and I think I've said it on this show before, that I despise realistic video games. that fact, you know, I think it's still cool. I think, you know, I really got annoyed with, what was it, which version of, Madden was it that we were playing where I finally just set down the controller and went, I can't take it, we're too close to commercials. I want something that's just, I can just sit down and smash buttons and still win.
You will be happy to know that NFL Blitz was the top PSN download for January.
Oh, nice, nice. That is good. I would play Blitz every day.
So you are not
stupid easy.
You are not. I'm pretty sure it's slightly more complicated now.
I know. Unfortunately,
but even still, I bet that they dispense of the, like you said, the stupid realism things and just get down to hitting people. Dude, I loved it. Pass interference, what's that? No, you tackle the guy before he gets the ball. That's how you stop a pass.
Right, exactly.
That game was awesome. And I
best
even loved
game
the,
ever.
I loved the GameCube version with the commentators.
Oh, oh yeah, they were gosh. So funny.
And that was, I mean, I actually, like, why doesn't Madden do that? Where seriously, they would say stuff, I used to play a lot. and they would say stuff after playing, like, oh, I would pay more than 20 games. I'm late a couple hundred games. But even like 100 in, they would say something, I'd go, I literally had never heard that before. That's yeah. awesome. And they had things where they'd rotate through, and I would play 20 games just to hear this one line because it was so funny that instant they said it. And I was like, oh, I want to hear it, but I have to play like 20 games before they repeated it.
Right.
It's like, that's awesome. And I don't know why Madden doesn't do that. They have like 5 that they repeat over and over and over.
Right. I think if they were to have a, I think that that's a good place to move. Well, you know, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So yes, there are some like MLB, 2K12 that are becoming more and more real and in places where it's like that's really cool. You know, not commercials, but helping
well,
be a better
think...
player.
I think that obviously it's a great market. They sell unbelievable numbers of those games. Like, they're doing the right thing. It's just my personal preference isn't with that.
Yeah, but, no. I gotcha.
You know.
And there's NFL Blitz, which is also awesome. Or exactly. What, NBA Jam, is that? I don't remember. That used to be an over the top game. I don't know if it still is.
Yeah.
He's on fire!
That was.
Boom, chugga-lugga!
I feel like that's just like yes. part of the. I feel like everybody today that they've envisioned that one. He's on fire.
That game was awesome.
Was that the was? I actually don't know this. You might know this, but was that like a common thing where you're like you're on fire if you get 3 goals like in a row before that game, or did that game pioneer that whole idea?
Ooh. Let's see. It had to have been before. I don't know. That
you,
just feels like
think...
that was like a real world on the court type of thing. Are you looking it up on what's that? What site is that? It's not the Hick Dictionary. It's the Urban Dictionary. Or...
yeah. No, it is. Look at this. It's not the Urban Dictionary. I'm looking at Wikipedia. He's on pop culture. In certain subcultures, the phrase "he's heating up," "he's on fire," and he's "boom chakalaka" have entered a common usage. It is. I don't know if you've ever played if you've ever played beer pong.
No.
No. Okay. You know the principle of the game, though, right? You have a bunch of cups. You have a table tennis little. Ball, ping pong ball, and okay. You're trying to throw it into the other guy's cups, and if you get in their cup, they have to take a drink of, it's like you like split 2 beers between 2 people, so it's not a lot of alcohol, but if you get
2 beers between 2 people.
Yeah,
got
so
it.
Each person gets a beer. Anyway, but, and so there's this competition, but if you get 3 cups in a row, the first time you're heating up, and then the next time he's on fire, and I always was like, man, is that an NBA Jam thing? Is that where that comes from? And it totally is. That's hilarious. That's awesome.
Awesome.
Because we're at the age where it's like, we were so young that as far as we knew, basketball didn't exist before NBA Jam. You know, because we were so young. It was like, or at least for me, that was my first introduction to basketball. And so I have no context to know.
Mine was in elementary school when I saw the courts outside.
Oh, nice.
You know.
But
cool.
That's
I guess
hilarious.
I'm a little older than you, but yeah.
I didn't know that that's where that came from. And I wonder how many people say that thinking that that had to have come from somewhere, and it came from a video game from our youth. That's awesome.
That is sweet. Was it, now the one I played was on the Sega. Was that the original?
Yeah, that's what it looked game? Like. Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome. So, oh yes, that was awesome. Okay, walk down memory lane. Let's talk about Twitter for a bit here, because they've got a couple things going on. The first one is actually and they're both about payments or making money, I guess, is the way to say it. The first one is a new app called Chirpify, and it used to be called Sell Simply, and now they changed their name. But the idea is they're an app where you can hook up your Twitter account and your PayPal account together, and then people can send you payments by tweeting. Like, so for example, you could tweet out, send at James Furlough $20 I owe him. Or better yet, you could say, like, say we're selling T-shirts or something like that. We could say, hey, T-shirts for sale. Somehow we would say that. And then followers could just simply say, buy. And that's it. And, like, maybe as a direct message or an at reply. And that would be done.
Okay,
because you'd have your PayPal account hooked up. The other person would have theirs, and they would manage the whole interaction. And they were saying, like, it may not work great for, like, collecting rent or something like that. But it could be awesome for, like, charities. Hey, everyone, donate. You know, if there's, like, another tsunami or earthquake, hey, everyone, donate $5 to this cause. You could say, donate $5 to Charity Water.
Yeah.
Done. And it would do it.
That's a good idea. I could see where I mean, obviously, that would be a good one. But, you know, I think it'll definitely fall into the area of micropayments, you know, like in video games and stuff, where people are making small payments of $1, $5, $10 tops. That's where people are going to use that. But I could see them, I could see if you could find ways to monetize pop culture trending things. Like you said, T-shirts would be hard because you want something where people can go back and look later. But I think if you've got some big thing that you want people to pay attention to, your tweets being retweeted, it's a trending topic, and you want to monetize, and you've got some idea to monetize that, I think that could be huge, you know.
Yeah, and then they're building an API, so other companies like eBay, Etsy, and Kickstarter, they can integrate that stuff.
Cool.
But it's a really cool idea, and it's cool to see the ways that people are attempting to make money off of Twitter, and this is something where I would think that, honestly, Twitter should buy them, and you know, and say, hey, we're integrating with PayPal, Square, you know, whoever, basically, and we're going to allow you to do payments over Twitter, and we're going to make sure it's secure and stuff like that, which is really cool, I think. But actually, right now, Twitter's focusing on something different. They are getting ready to unveil – so just out of curiosity, I'm going to stop for half a second. Do you hear an echo from when I talk?
No.
All right. It's just me. As long as it's in my own ears, that's fine. But I'm listening to myself talk. It's weird. So anyways, Twitter is getting ready to roll out their own self-serve ads, a la Facebook and Google and probably many others. So the idea would be you and I could say, hey, I want to buy some promoted trends or promoted tweets for, you know, $20, and I enter in what it is, and it, you know, and basically you get charged by, like, by how many, either it's by the views or it sounded like the way it did it was they charge a minimum, at least right now, they charge a minimum cost per follower, however that works, and then, like, if someone clicks on something or they favorite or they retweet, they charge you again, you know, for, like, engagement, basically.
Right.
But currently, like, they've only been going after big advertisers, and they literally have a sales force that, like, calls them up and works with them. And so they've been really expensive, like 50 cents per follower or 10 cents per engagement.
Wow.
Which Yeah. Had I known that, I'd be clicking on more of that stuff. Take that. But the reason is because they have to have real people behind, like, managing that relationship. And so the idea is it's a self-serve thing where anyone can go in and do it, and so you can watch the prices drop a lot,
nice.
Which is cool. I mean, of course, this also means that you're going to have lots of ads and promoted tweets, which could be horrible or be awesome. Mm. You don't know. It's just probably going to be a lot. Think, you know, Facebook, Google, you know, those kind of things.
You know, it's all about the tastefulness. You know, I've found that I haven't really, I have not liked the direction that Facebook has gone content wise recently, but that's partly because I'm a little bit of a snob because I spend so much time on Reddit. I have more cultured entertainment on other websites. I just want my friends' status updates. As far as advertising goes, I haven't thought it was overbearing at all what Facebook has done over the time. And same with Google. I've always thought that you know, Google's been real classy about their ad space and everything, and they've always done a good job of identifying it. So it's, you know, you can just skip over it if you don't want it. I find that a lot of times people are wasting their money because what I want has nothing to do with what they're advertising. But if it works for them, it works for them. And so I think as long as Twitter's tasteful and, you know, cautious and careful, I think that it won't be that big of a deal, and I think it'll be fine. You know, they just have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, if you overload apps, you're gonna cause yourself problems.
Yeah, I think they know that. I still think they should buy like Chirpify and go that route. That'd be
different. I think so too.
That'd be interesting.
Right.
Yeah, and I'll even talk about another way that another startup's making money. A little bit later.
Right. Ah,
maybe I'll do it now just because it makes sense.
Go for it.
So that's the way that Twitter's making money. And then there is Pinterest, the latest hot startup for chicks.
for das chicas.
Yeah, which as a side thing, someday they're going to have to figure out how to deal with the fact that all of their content is copyrighted.
It's the big problem of it is the defining issue of content curation websites like Digg and Reddit and Facebook, and well, Facebook's going that direction, and Pinterest, you know, websites like this where they're, the whole idea is you don't have new content, you have content from around the web brought to your face. It's a different type of searching. It's an informed surfing, and it's not done with an algorithm. It's done by crowdsourcing, which is, you know. But yeah, they don't have original content. They only have everybody else's. So it's going to be a problem for everybody. If ACTA were to pass, or as ACTA gets enacted, rather, that bill and you know, SOAP and PIP and all these things, they really, really threaten these types of websites that are, you know, driving a tremendous amount of traffic and. But they're
It's just weird. I mean, because their whole thing is like, I don't know. I mean, like with YouTube, they don't care even if a video gets embedded because they still can run an ad on it. It's like, what do you do for a picture? You know, if you had a banner next to it, now your picture is embedded in Facebook. Great. Now you just pay for the hosting of the picture, the bandwidth.
Right.
You know, it just gets weird. But I don't know. They probably will never have to deal with it. But that was a concern because they were like, it's all about that. It's not really user content generated, really. It's curated.
Right.
Which is where it gets funky. But that's not the important part. They actually, and I think that this, what I'm about to say, will make it even more interesting. And they've, just for the record, they've stopped doing this now ever since they got funded by Big VC. But before then, they were using affiliate links. There is a system called, I wish I could find it real quick. I don't even see it. basically, oh, it's skim links is the name of it. Anytime that you would link to something, like on a, let's say Amazon book, right? You post a picture of an Amazon book, and then it links back to an Amazon page. They would embed their own affiliate link on it after you're done posting it. So that, let's say I saw it and went, oh, made the stick. That sounds like that's a cool looking cover. I'll click on it. I go to Amazon. I decide to buy it. Pinterest gets the affiliate for it. And so that's how they were making a lot of money, because you'd have it on, like, you know, a bunch of different blogs and buying places, because apparently it's a huge social shopping, which even makes you go, no wonder girls really like it.
Cover the sexism for the day.
Yeah, well, there you go. anyways, all that to say is they were making a fair amount of money, it sounded like, doing it that way, which then pulls into this whole, like, okay, it's not their picture, it's someone else's picture, and now they're collecting money off of that picture instead of the original content creator of it, potentially. I guess if they're linking back to the original site, like Amazon, they don't care. But it was very interesting that they were doing this. It sounds like after they got their VC funding, they turned all that off because they didn't need to anymore. But that was how they stayed live for a bit. I'm kind of surprised, like, Twitter doesn't do something like that. That'd be fascinating. Just bought a book off Amazon. They collect an affiliate fee for it.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. And I could see where they could say, hey, companies, sign up with us. We actually – this would be weird, right? Like, I guess it's a promoted tweet in a way, but what if it wasn't? What if it was sign up for our program, and if any time – I don't want to say it. Like, if I tweeted out an Amazon book title,
yeah,
and someone ended up buying it, Twitter would get, you know, say it was a 5%, whatever. Twitter could get 2%, and I could get 3% of that sale. And you know, when we get it from Amazon, and Twitter would just cut me a check. Or better yet, let's say I've got a store and I want to figure out a way to promote myself. Maybe that's just where the promoted tweets come in, I suppose. But maybe I could say, hey, I want to use Twitter to, you know, to share this. Nah, that doesn't make any sense. That'd be dumb. So forget that. That'd be promoted tweets and stuff can do that. But I don't know. It's an interesting system that Pinterest was using that I thought was a cool way of making money using affiliate links.
Yeah, it's clever.
Yeah.
I got to imagine it's not the best way to generate a huge amount of income, but I'm sure that it, you know, it at least gave them some capital to play with and made them more appetizing for a VC to step in.
And the weird part, too, is that, you know, it makes it so that, how do you want to say it? Like, it's not as obvious, right?
Right.
Like, and they'd have to figure out a way. They should, if they continue down that route, be able to say, like, highlighted in such a way that we all knew that they were getting paid off of me clicking on this and going here.
Right.
Which I might have been part of the problem. You know, whereas advertisements, pretty darn obvious it's an ad.
Right. Well, and I got to imagine that even if you were to alert people to what you were doing, I don't think anybody would complain about it. It doesn't bother me at all.
No, and I'm not saying it should. It should just be, you know, about it.
I can say, but we've been aware of it for years because when we originally did Bob the Autographer, we were an Amazon affiliate for books that we were pushing. Now, granted, I don't think anybody ever bought any books through our website.
We weren't pushing them.
we were encouraging. We were loving them with our recommendations.
We were sharing.
Highlighting. So
curating.
Exactly. So I am. Cool.
Yeah. So there was some other news this week.
This is actual news too. This isn't just us being fanboys. And it was pretty hard to avoid it. it took over my news feed, which is kind of disgusting. Because as we're talking today, obviously a lot of stuff happened this week. But that being said, Apple made a tiny little announcement that they're going to release the next generation of their operating system. It's going to be called Mountain Lion, right after Lion. Lion had maybe a 7-month streak run before it is already getting muscled out.
Just as an FYI, another name for Mountain Lion is Puma.
Right.
And another name for Puma and Mountain Lion is Cougar. Just want to put that out there.
Why is this significant?
The very first version of OS X was called Puma, and the one before Snow Leopard was called Cougar.
Oh, I know. I didn't realize that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So obviously, you know,
Well, there just aren't that many cats. I mean, until you start naming them after Siamese cats and house cats.
That'd
you
know, be sweet. Tabby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what would be funny and very clever, and I don't think they would ever do this, but if they started naming the iOSs after house cats and kept making the OS X's after the great cats, that'd be kind of cool.
That'd be sweet.
But
anyways,
this is totally this is insignificant. So anyways, this is just an evolution of what came before it. Obviously, Lion was the big. Well, Snow Leopard was the big pivot when it came to how it processed. They upped everything to 64-bit. They made a huge changes to the back end, but almost made no changes to the actual GUI. Whereas Lion, they made almost no changes to the back end, no real significant differences in how it worked, but they made huge changes to the GUI, making it more iOS-esque. So it took a lot of, you know, a lot of the gestures and stuff, and that's the direction they're moving with it. And they released a little short video. It's like a 5-minute thing talking about what it'll have, and basically it's getting even tighter integration with iOS, with your iPad. They're bringing the iPad and the OS X even closer together, and they're introducing things like that's what I'm looking for. Like iMessages, notes, reminders.
Game Center, notifications.
Right. All of those things that have kind of become your real utility-based stuff. What they're doing is they're bringing, you know, in Lion, they brought the themes of iOS, whether it was Touch or, you know, Flicks or Launch Center, they brought the mentality. Now they're bringing a lot of the utilities cross-platform, and they're all synced across iCloud, which is the cool part. So if you write a note on your computer, it'll sync to your phone. If you write on your phone, it'll sync to your computer. Same with all your to-do lists and your calendars and your, you know, mail and your pictures and everything, and it all does it wirelessly. And so really kind of pushing this idea that they're obviously moving in the direction of having your computer move out of the center of your technological constellation, and they're really pushing hard to have it just be a high-powered, high-performance iPad in a lot of ways.
So I have an article that I want to talk to you about and related to that, but I also I don't want to say it. Like, I also think that this is what Apple wanted Lion to be originally, but they couldn't do it. Because Steve Jobs wanted to get it out before he died,
right.
And B, they hadn't announced iOS 5 yet, and it didn't make any sense to talk about these features when it wasn't on the phone, But this is what they wanted Lion to be originally, and they just couldn't do it at the time yet because it wasn't done developing. They hadn't, you know, built it out for the iPhone yet. And I think you're just going to start to see it go more and more, coming together, which there was a cool GigaOm article that was talking about the slow rise of the slow-mo clo OS.
You're going to have to explain this one to me.
Yeah, so the slow-mo clo, which stands for social, mobile, and cloud. SoMoClo.
SoMoClo.
Yeah. So it's the idea of this OS that is all about social and sharing. To Facebook, to Twitter, to YouTube, you know, get it out to your friends. And then being able to increasingly go mobile. Like iPhones, iPads, Android devices, those kind of web OS. You know, and then the cloud, right? Everything is synced up everywhere as it should be. And what's cool is, Google Chrome kind of did that, right? I mean, it's all in the cloud already. It's all in a browser. You're talking with someone over IM. I can hear you typing.
No, I'm making. So I'm actually making show notes.
It's
more important than that. But I'll stop so that it's not quite as obnoxious.
Sorry.
That's okay.
And so it's all synced over the cloud. So Chrome OS was kind of did that, right? Because it's like, oh, it's all in a browser. Therefore, it's all automatically already synced and sharing is pretty easy. But now we're starting to see where it's going into the fabrics of the operating system itself, which is what we talked about a while ago, where it was like, no, you're going to have it where all your apps are installed locally, and you might even have the local data, and it's the cloud that syncs everything and streams maybe the big things,
right?
Like movies and maybe even music, but the apps and data itself, maybe someday, but, you know, not yet. But it's kind of cool to see that moving this direction.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing they're doing that I'm a big fan of, for those of you long-time listeners of the show, well, no, I'm a big fan of Valve's Steam, which is the game center that Valve has created. It's where you can buy games like Half-Life 2, and it's got all sorts of cool features, because once you log in, you can play the computer, you can download and play the game on any computer. You just have to be logged in, and that's how they kind of keep track of DRM, but there's not a limitation on how many computers you can do it on. There's no physical disk, but one of the things that I always liked that Valve did was, if you had an old game, like I had, I bought a physical copy of Half-Life 2 because I got it before Valve came out, when Steam came out. Well, when Steam came out, I went on and was like, well, I want to get these games. Well, it turns out all you have to do is put in the little key code that you get. If you put that key code into Steam, you automatically get all those purchases, and it backs it up. Well, Apple has decided to go the same route, now the Mac App Store will sense any time you've had some sort of either new software or updated software with a physical disk, and it will automatically add those purchases to your App Store. So if you get a new computer, you don't have to have those physical disks with you. You're just cool. Now you have a complete library. So it's kind of like iTunes Match, but it's all done internally. It doesn't cost anything. I think it just makes a tremendous amount of sense. I like it. So there's a couple new little neat features that they're adding in. And I think what you're watching is you're watching OS X evolve into a very logical, very powerful platform, and I still think that, you know, most people who don't like Apple don't like Apple because they've never used Apple. you know, because it's, I mean, that's the sort of thing that, it, you know, it just makes it for ease of use. You know, that's
I like both, just for the record.
Yeah, me too.
And use both.
And I'm slowly falling in love with Linux, so.
That's weird.
I know. Especially if you read my tweet earlier when I first started using it. I was like, I've never done anything in the command line before. I don't know what I'm doing. But it's kind of cool. I'm getting the... Let me give you... Okay, I'm going to move on.
All right.
I'll jump back to this later.
Okay.
If we have time. So for those of you guys, Microsoft also made a tiny announcement about their... new website, or they're not the new website. Oh, jeez.
Website.
Their new operating system. They've been in talks trying to figure out how they're going to advertise it and logos and whatnot. And they got this new team that was going to design their logo. They spent a bunch of money. And the first question that they asked when they came in was like, okay, so you guys are Windows, right? And then Microsoft was like, yeah, we're making Windows. And I'm like, okay, so why are all your logos flags? and Microsoft's like, oh. So the new logo is super clean, super simple. It's four squares. They're rigid. They kind of have cool, perspective angle on them, but it's supposed to actually look like a window. Sometimes I can't believe people get paid to make these logos. You got to check it out. It'll be on our website, but it's clean. I mean, I guess if you can design something that's super clean, it's worth a lot of money. But it's sort of also because Metro is all about the different. They've got those the tiles. As they're called, it sort of has a tile feel too. So they're tying all of their design stuff together, and that's really how they're going to push Windows 8. They're obviously the tiles is going to be, this is all their marketing ideas, and you're watching. And one of the fun parts about Microsoft is you can watch ideas develop over time. And this is obviously an area where they're developing over time, and one of the new things is this new window design, and they're bringing that to their, they'll be bringing that to their operating systems, and we'll get to cool. See. Yeah, so pretty fun. Yeah, just wanted to, you guys got to check it out. Check it out. Okay, and then my last little note that I wanted to bring up was we finally have some real numbers behind the Amazon Kindle Fire. We've been talking about. They obviously, they're the big competitor against Apple. So the question is, how many of these
are they on fire?
Is that the question? Yeah. So actually, they're doing quite well.
Dramatic pause.
So Apple always, now the one thing I always complain about is that Apple will tell you how many iPads that they have sold, whereas everybody else will tell you how many they've produced. So this is another one of those, this is how many they've produced.
Well, so just for the record, like with HP, we're not 100% sure how many we've sold, but we know how many we've shipped.
Right.
Figuring out how many you've sold is very hard, unless you happen to own the stores. Weird. They own most of the stores.
Well, and they license with, when you walk into Best Buy's, it's like you walk into a little mini Apple store when you go to their table.
But I am willing to bet money that they are actually discounting shipments and calling them sales to like Best Buy and such, because a majority of them come off the site and come from their Apple store. Like whatever, it's rounding. We don't care.
Right. That's a good point.
I'm willing to bet that's the case. Maybe they've got some sort of sales data deal with them, but I would be surprised.
All fair. Okay, that is. I appreciate that being brought up. But even that aside, the number's pretty impressive. Turns out they've built 3.9 million, nearly 4 million Kindle Fires. Now, obviously that pales pretty terribly in by comparison to Apple. Looks like the overall market grew from 17.4 million in units to 27.1 million units, a 55% bigger pie. Apple's shipments grew 39% to 15.4 million. So, well over four times as many, 1-to-4 ratio. But that being said, 3.9 is nothing to scoff at. It's obviously going to be around in a way that the webOS tablet wasn't. So we'll have to keep watching that. And we'll see, as the Metro tablets come out, that'll obviously change some more. But I think Amazon might have found something that's very close to the winning combination for competing against Apple with a Android tablet. So cool.
I like it.
All right, man.
So, I think we're good on the news.
Yeah.
There's other stuff we could talk about, I suppose. But, like last year, last minute one, just for the fun of it.
Okay.
I have good news. Lego Star Wars sets are going to remain around for a while because they signed another 10-year licensing deal. So expect more video games and more awesome Legos.
Makes sense. They just came out with the 3D Star Wars movies, and they're going to be releasing a new one of those every 2 years.
Dude,
for the next,
could you imagine 3D
12
Legos?
Years?
That'd be amazing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but the point is that they're gonna keep building sets and selling sets because
why not?
Star Wars is gonna continue to stay in the public consciousness for quite some time.
Dude, Lucas knows how to milk something.
Man, geez.
He is amazing.
That was, well, I mean, his thing was he took almost no pay for the first Star Wars. He just got all licensing rights. So
that's brilliant.
Oh yeah. So,
well, that was like Sylvester Stallone wrote the movie Rocky, and they wanted to buy it from him for like $100,000. And at the time, he was like, I was not eating because I could not afford it. That was the hardest thing in the world to say no to. He said, better idea, make me an actor, and I get a percent of the sales.
Right, which
that worked out.
Yeah, obviously that made all the difference in the world for him. So
yeah, he goes that was a hard one, but so that's cool. So that's so. There's your good news for the week.
Woo-hoo! Well, by the way, are you gonna see the 3D Star Wars episode Uno?
No.
I've caught a lot of derision for this because I am going to go see it, but I have to defend myself. I don't know how many people are familiar with this story, but. You know, I always wanted to be an engineer. Our grandfather was an engineer when I was 10. He said, you'd be a good engineer. And I was like, I'd be a great engineer. Oh, I don't want to be an engineer. But everybody would always ask me, what kind of an engineer do you want to be? And I was like, I don't know, the kind that builds things.
Yeah.
And which is, if you're familiar with the field of engineering, it's a little bit broader than that. The first Star Wars was actually the movie that helped me focus on what I thought was cool.
So when you say first Star Wars...
Star Wars Episode 1 helped me focus, because before that, I didn't really know what kind of an engineer I wanted to be. I watched a bunch of robotic droids walking around killing Gungans and decided I wanted to be a robotic engineer. And that has driven my... I mean, obviously my interest in robots has evolved and is a little bit more... refined than Gungan killing robots at this point, but overall, I mean, I want to build robots. That's what I like doing. That's what I get to do on a regular basis nowadays, which is unbelievably cool. But Star Wars was the one that kind of that was the one that centered it for me. So I guess out of thanks, I have to go watch it. But. I won't make anybody else go with me because, let's face it, nobody wants to see that acting again.
Huh. But it's 3D acting. That's different.
I know. It's awesome. I can't wait. I'm actually just a little bit excited, especially because, you know, say what you will about the plot line and the acting, because it was terrible. I'll give you that. But the action scenes, the lightsabers, all that stuff was always amazing. And so hopefully, you know, to actually get some perspective on that will just add to the excitement and, you know, maybe we'll put in earplugs and stuff. I don't know. We'll see.
The part that kills me, it's like, I don't have little kids, so I don't really care. But it was like, if you had little kids, this would be awesome to take them to.
Right.
Except they're doing them in the wrong order. And that just kills me.
I can't even. M. Night Shyamalan, George Lucas. For those of you who can't see, my hands are at the same level. They both drive me crazy because there's so much potential. You know, they did a couple of great movies, and then it just was downhill from there. I don't know what happened. They got full of, you know what it was, is they got successful and people stopped telling them no. And to bring this all back to why this matters, what was Steve Jobs always great at telling people no? Lesson. Wisdom.
Well, Matthew, I would love to go on, but no, we cannot.
Okay.
It's time to wrap this up. But first, how was your week?
It's good. Like I said, I'm falling slowly in love with Linux, which is kind of weird. Yeah, especially because it's command line Linux. It's not even GUI based, which is kind of intense. But
wow, that is intense.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool. And assembly. I'm getting deep inside the computers nowadays. So that's fun.
That's cool.
What about you? How was your week?
Oh my gosh, my week was horrible. So I wanted to make a wiki for this project that I'm working on, and they have software that you can download, which is cool, whatever. But in order to use it, it requires PHP 5, which also our website was working off an older version of WordPress because the latest version of WordPress required, guess what, PHP 5. So contacted my hosting provider and was like, I want to upgrade. Let's do this. Apparently, that's not easy to do. And so they literally told me, this is literally what they told me, said, back up everything on our hosting. Like, take all the files, download them onto your computer, copy all of your databases onto your computer, and then copy down all of your settings in the administration panel. Because what we're going to do is when you tell us to, we will flip a switch and we'll migrate you over to a new system. It's new. And then you literally have to rebuild everything on the new system. So, I downloaded everything. And I've been at this for a while now, and it took a while. Saved all of my settings. I've got, like, a lot, I guess. I don't know. I've got, like, 12 active domains and site projects going on right now.
Yeah.
So I, you know, saved everything. Which, by the way, our podcasts are large and take a while to upload when you try to do all 20 of them at the same time. yeah, and so I literally just switched over hosting stuff this week, and it took me all week. I kid you not.
Nice.
It was unbelievable. So the good news is our site is now using the latest version of WordPress, which is cool. It means nothing.
I can tell. You know.
Yeah. And I was able to install the wiki and get that going, which was cool. So at the end of the week, I accomplished what I wanted to do literally on Monday. So
hey,
that was my life.
That is an accomplishment. That's big news.
Yeah, I guess. So and now I am, after we get done, I'm going to be a man and go change the oil in my Jeep.
Nice.
Yeah. All right.
Rough and tumble.
Yeah. So, good show. And thank you, everybody else, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. I have a beard.
Free February.